Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Welcome to the Hollywood Casino Press Box with your hosts, Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoyne.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
The best guests, the best insight.
Lofton with his team down by two, to the corner, Caputo! No good! And it's over! St. Louis is going dancing!
All backed by over 40 combined years of covering the biggest events in St. Louis sports.
Blues have the puck. Thomas off the wall. Shoots, and it's in. They score! It's the St. Louisan, Pat Maroon. Bring out the Zamboni. Pat Maroon just put the city on his shoulders, and he saves them to the conference finals.
Now, here are Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoyne on 590 The Fan KFNS and 590thefan.com.
Good morning. We have the all-star back.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here.
I set it up. I knew he was coming with it. I just laid on the table. Andy Van Slyke in studio. Martin Kilcoyne is back after his excursion in the Wild Wild West.
Great to be out of the woods. You know, the phone reception was bad. I was in central Wisconsin. The nearest town is Amherst, which is population 1,000. So it's about 20 minutes from Stevens Point. Does that help at all?
So you were the only celebrity in town, that's what you're telling us.
By far.
Okay.
You know what? We went to a little...
Fishing, hunting?
Years ago, in this little town of Amherst, we went to a small bar, and there's an older guy in there that owns it, Fred. It's the Club Orlo. It's still got the old Blatt sign out front, and he's from Milwaukee. We start talking. He said, "But my favorite team is the Cardinals." He said, "Because I grew up loving Stan Musial."
Wow.
So years later, we went up, and we brought him an autograph ball. And I didn't have to pay for that 70-cent glass of Schlitz, okay?
Very nice.
So back from the woods and joined by a legend, Frank, and his friend.
How about the injury? I've never seen you like this. You have a sling on your left
arm. I do.
Tell our listening audience what's going on.
Well, I had rotator cuff surgery and ended up being worse because when he went in there just to fix my rotator, 90% of my bicep tendon was torn at the shoulder. So I guess what they do is they cut it. Release it, and then reattach it. So the rehab's going to be probably a little longer than I anticipated.
So Andy Van Slyke, is the injury from playing baseball all these years or from pumping iron? Because you and
yes.
I look like guys who've been lifting a lot of weights.
Yes. The answer is probably yes.
This has got to kill you, though, because we see you over.
Your spot, Gold's Gym.
It is. Gold's
Gym. 2 hours a day every day?
No, not 2 hours. I was a six-day-a-week guy, you know. And I don't know, like, as you know, I played a lot of golf when I got done playing. I became a scratch golfer, got bored with that, so I figured, you know, I wanted a chess. I never had a chess my whole life. My goal was to develop a chess. So it took about 8 years, and I finally have a chess, and then I ended up getting injured because I bench pressed too much.
Wow. It's a dilemma you've had, right?
Yeah, they've been telling me lighter weights, Andy, for years. That's the key, lighter weights. What was your max? This is a Martin Frank kind of question.
You know what? I was never concerned about the powerlifting.
How about your weight now as opposed to when you played?
I played at 195, and at my heaviest and in my best shape, I was 230.
What are you now?
Nah, 220. Only because I've shriveled up in a month.
Yeah, you really let your body go.
You know, it's amazing is how hard it is to build up and how fast you lose it. So, you know, the old adage is you're gonna rust out before you wear out.
Now, you coached in the big leagues. When the guys were hurt, did you talk to them? Because the injured guys always say the other players just kind of walk right by like they don't exist. Is that true for coaches, players? Does everybody ignore the injured
it's
guys?
I think the players have, you know, the interesting part about is when you're on a roster, and especially if your team's playing well, and let's say, you know, you're coming back from an injury, you feel like you're just in the way. I mean, I don't think the perception is the players don't ignore you. It's just that you ignore the players because you realize they have better things to do than ask you how you're feeling. So it's really the individual player who will just stay out of the way, doesn't really want to get in anybody's routine, and you know, you just don't feel like you're contributing in any way except being there. So I kind of get what Izzy went through by not wearing his ring when they won the World Series. In some ways I respect that.
You know, it's the famous Andy Bennett story, which we've told, that when he got off to that terrible beginning the last year of his career, and he retired for 24 hours, and Boris said, no, you're not retiring. And he came back and he said, I'm not retiring, that he felt that even though he's 6'6", 260, that Tony La Russa and Dave Duncan did not acknowledge his existence. Like, he wasn't a human being. Mm-hmm. He couldn't help them. He couldn't pitch for them. And they didn't acknowledge him as a human being for a while.
I can understand that. I mean, I don't think it's right. As a coach, when we had injury players, when I was coaching Detroit and in Seattle, I would actually go out of my way just to see how they were doing. I mean, there's nothing worse than, you know, a player taking that responsibility on. And you still want to feel like you're part of the team, but you know that you're really not part of the team. So you almost become like, you know, the furniture in the clubhouse.
But if a certain
A chair is necessary to get dressed and undressed, but... You know, you feel like a chair.
If certain guys get injured all the time, do the players in the room eventually go, oh, yeah, here we go? Like, can you get that rep?
J.D. Drew.
J.D.
Well,
Drew type
well
of
no,
them?
J.D. Drew. And I feel
no,
bad.
I just think that certain you get a sense of certain players can play, you know, at half, not at half speed, but not fully feeling 100%. So, yeah, there are certain players that go, you know, so what, your arm's sore. My arm's sore, too, but I'm still going out there. You know, my leg, you know, I might have, you know, tweaked my hamstring. Well, you still got to go out. You can still run at 80% without blowing it out. So they're much more protective. You know, that part of that culture, though, has been developed at the major level because teams are protecting their players more than they ever have.
As we continue as we segue into this, we're talking about weightlifting and strength. The Cardinals' human muscle machine, Tyler O'Neill, wins another game for them. He's won two games now for them single-handedly since the All-Star break. Now, I'm not suggesting at all that he's going to have Willie McGee's impact or Vince Coleman's impact, but there have been instances in the Cardinals' past where they bring up an outfielder from the minor leagues, he gets hot, and it plays a big role in them having success. What do you think about Tyler O'Neill?
I say you're right with it as long as you can. Why not? And the mere fact that his production, you know, last two out of three games is something we've seen from nobody, really, all year offensively. You know, when you think about it, I mean, I think the first week Goldschmidt was what we anticipated, and since then we haven't seen anything on a consistent basis. So, you know, when a player's hot like that, you just don't know when and how long it's going to last. So you ride it out as long as you can. There's no reason for him not to be playing until he, you know, goes for 0-15 or whatever, and then you give him a break.
And you just live with the strikeouts, right? A guy like that, you just kind of, you know what he is. But it's worth it. The upside's worth it.
So far. I mean, is he striking out any less than some of the other guys on this team?
Like,
or
nowadays,
anymore?
Nowadays, everybody strikes
That's
out, right?
That's my point. That's my point. I mean, there's an exception. And we accept strikeouts like we never have at the major league level.
He said something after the game last night that was really interesting. I'd love to get your take on this because you know what it's like to be in a groove. He said, quote, I'm on time. I just want to be on time and give myself the best chance to get a hit, big hit. It kind of elaborate on that.
Well, I think, you know, there's and I was thinking about this a little bit watching the game last night and watching Carpenter struggle and watching some of the other guys who haven't performed at the level that we anticipated, is I'm 100% convinced that 95% of slumps are mental. So, you know, there can be something physically going on with your swing or whatever, but I think it always starts mentally. You know, you're not on time. Like you said, he's not late. And I think the number one thing that players – hitters at the big league level is that they're late getting ready to hit. And the best hitting coaches that I've been around at the major league level, it's better to be early than it is to be late. So to me, it looks like he's just getting ready to hit early. And it's so weird. There's sometimes when you're at the plate and the ball looks like the size of a softball, and other times it looks like the size of a golf ball. And right now, because he's on time, he can really recognize pitches earlier probably than he ever has since he's been up here. Well, it's just so hard to articulate what it means to recognize pitches early, but we're talking about maybe 3 or 4 feet sooner than you normally would if you're struggling, and that makes all the difference in the world. It takes a 95-mile-an-hour fastball, and instead of it being 100 because you can't really see it, it makes it 95. And in some ways, it actually makes it 92 because you recognize it so early.
And the mental part of it is, are you walking from the batter's box, you know, up to the plate, excuse me, from the on-deck circle to the batter's box, are you thinking, God, I am just, I mean, are they? Is it
I
like,
don't have a plan. Do they? I don't have a plan. It's real, I mean, I don't, I can't see the ball. I'm not comfortable. I mean, right now, can anybody, does it look like, does it look like Carpenter has a plan when he hits right now?
No.
I mean, he knows he's lost. So, right now, his swing, obviously, he's a pull hitter. But right now, when he gets to the plate, it just doesn't look like he's on time. It doesn't look like he has confidence. And some of his swings, emergency swings, you can tell that he's just not mentally where he needs to be.
Do the guys ever look up at the scoreboard and say, God, I'm hitting 210? I mean, like,
everybody does.
They all look at their numbers as
everybody
they're walking up.
Everybody looks at the scoreboard. And if they say they don't, they're lying.
Is it as easy as you say being on time, starting your swing a split second earlier? I mean, that doesn't seem that difficult, but it's the most difficult thing to do in sports.
Well, you know, I always felt when I was hitting my best, and I think this applies to probably every hitter in the big leagues, is you get ready to hit before the pitch is released. You really do. You know, you're getting ready to hit before the pitch is even out of the pitcher's hand. So, you know, there's an old saying, see the ball, see the ball. You know, you hear these amateur coaches all the time, see the ball and then swing. Well, if you're waiting to see the ball, it's too late. Because you don't see the ball basically out of the hand. If you do, you're really hot. You can see there have been times when you can actually see fingers off the pitcher's hand when you're really in that zone. And that's what, you know, you've heard hitters in the zone. That's what they're talking about. They can actually see the ball coming out of the pitcher's hand.
Wasn't it Edwin Encarnacion who was kind of a mediocre hitter for a while? And then it was a simple thing where he just started his swing a little bit earlier?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I got his numbers in front of me because it was crazy because he was not a this is what he did. All of a sudden, so he's hitting 8, 21, and 17 homers. And then 2011, that little swing adjustment, he goes 42, 36, 34, 39, 42, 38.
Well, Batista, remember Batista was the same way.
Batista, yeah.
Batista was, I think it might have been Batista
you're talking about.
It
was.
It was Batista who was playing for the Pirates, changed his swing to start his swing so much earlier. And he's getting his foot down much earlier than he did later in his career. He's getting his foot down earlier, and therefore he's getting ready to hit. And if you really study, you know, if you watch the game tonight and tomorrow afternoon, is if you see that the hitters that are really on time, it's when their front foot is down early.
Yeah, you're right. He was hitting 13 home runs, and he goes 54, 43, 27, 28, 35, 40.
Right.
Yeah, he was the one.
Yeah, he changed his swing to get started earlier.
Yep.
If you're the hitting coach, a guy like Carpenter does have a resume, obviously has some clue of what he's supposed to be doing up there. What would you say to him? What do they say to guys like that?
I don't know what they're saying to him.
What should they say? I mean, should he swing earlier instead of taking so many? Do you think there's some logic to that?
I think you always hit your way or swing your way out of a slump. There's no question.
So take a few less, maybe?
I think he needs to swing as many times as possible. Not worry about walking.
Do you think he became obsessed with his on-base percentage and the analytics? Or
that's a question I can't answer. Only he can answer that if it's asked to him. But I would say he just needs to swing.
And then what are you seeing with Goldschmidt now, who looks like he's kind of maybe turned the corner, though it's still early here?
Well, it is early, but, you know, like last time I was here a month ago, I said he should be hitting fourth. So I like him in the fourth position. I think he hit third last night, but it's just a matter of time. He's got the resume. It seems like his timing's better, and there's no way that he's going to, you know, continue to struggle like he has the last couple months. It can't happen.
I mean, he's a six-time All-Star, six straight years. So that's another one. I think Michael Gersh said a lot of these guys look at the back of their baseball cards, and that's what they should be. Forget analytics. That's kind of who they are. And I think Goldschmidt falls in that camp.
Yeah.
It seems like nobody's worried. Like, he may not end up with robust numbers.
No.
But he's not going to be this guy all year.
He's not going to be like he's been the last 2 months. Absolutely not.
Is it also possible that Matt Carpenter, who's 33, and let's keep in mind, it's not just a struggle this season. It's the final maybe two and a half months of last season where he really struggled. All he had is that six-week period.
Yes.
That at 33, that, you know, guys sometimes have a dramatic fall and it could be done, or what do you think?
Well, there is a day, you know, when it happens to every player. I mean, there was a time when I was, when I knew that, man, I can't catch up to this fastball anymore. You know, it's just the way it is. You know, you can't react. You can't. I don't know if it's his eyes. I don't know if it's his fast twitch muscles that can't react anymore. I have no idea. I'm not around him. So where he is mentally and where he is physically, only he knows that. But there is a day, Frank, when you just go, uh-oh.
But
the ball's looking faster than it used to.
But a year after you're retired, you come back to spring training. At what age?
37.
37 with the Cardinals.
Yeah.
And your average was over 500? What was it for that spring?
520, what, five, whatever, something like that.
So.
Well, the time off.
That's crazy.
You got to recoup.
So who would you hit leadoff? Would you go with Fowler at this point? You go with Wong? Because the Carpenter, I think he threw him back out there last night just kind of hoping it would catch or something. But I think at this point you can't do that anymore.
I don't know. They don't have a leadoff hitter, basically, do they?
No.
I mean, they don't have it. They basically have a mishmash of a lineup. You know, you got your central guys, but.
I guess Tommy Edman has got a little speed. I don't know if he gets on base enough. He's hitting 254 now.
I mean, that's the problem. Wong can steal bases, but he doesn't get on base enough.
Wong, you know, he's a mystery to me. He has not, from the day he's been in the big leagues, he has been the same player, basically. I mean, you think there's a maturation period when you see improvement, but there isn't any there.
Yeah, there comes a time 4 or 5 years in the big league career, you are who you are.
Well,
you were an exception, but you didn't get a chance to play full time here.
That's true.
Until
I mean, that's true. But you would think you would see incremental, you know, long periods of time that you see improvement in a player, and maybe he, you know, slides backwards a little bit and then goes forward. But it seems like it's one step forward, one step back, one step forward, one step back.
How about this angle? And I was talking with Brian about this. Just elaborate on how difficult it really is to hit. I know it sounds like a dumb question, but when it's not going well, and these guys are throwing 95 and all these different pitches, just how horrible and how terrible the experience is when you are in a bad
funk. I equate it to take a sewing needle and get a piece of thread, turn out the lights, and find the hole.
I mean, Frank does some late night threading too, like a little.
I mean,
sewing.
Find the hole in the dark is basically the feeling you have when you go to the plate when you're struggling. It's a struggle, just to put the barrel on the baseball, and I mean it's hard enough when you're going good to hit. I mean the simple fact is that of all the sports you guys talk about, it is the single hardest thing to do in any sport in the world.
Gosh, yes,
because you fail 70% of the time, and you're considered great. What other profession can you fail 70% of the time and be considered great? So, I mean, if you can hit 275 in the big leagues, you are a darn good hitter. You can hit. If you hit 300, you're close to a Hall of Famer if you do it long enough.
And this is why players hate the media, because we're like, this guy's only hitting 270. Send him back to, and you're like, you know how freaking hard it is to hit 270?
270 in the big leagues, right. You can hit. Just look at the average batting average at the big league level for the last 100 years. Just check it. It's below 275.
And is it the lowest, like, this year in years? I know strikeout totals are extremely high. Home run totals are way up.
Well,
I bet the lowest batting average.
Well, and here's the thing. You're going to continue to see strikeouts and batting average dip because the game is, in the last 5 years, has changed like it. I mean, kind of like technology has in the last 10 years.
You see the Mike Shannon quote about his 80th birthday, and he said to Rick Hummel, he said, the game has changed more in the last 5 years than it did in the previous 50.
I believe that. It's absolutely true.
But is it less interesting now?
I find it less interesting.
I think a lot of people agree.
I think the mere fact that, the simple little things like, you know, you can't break up a double play. There's no arguments with the umpire. The replays. The mere fact that you don't see players using the whole field. There's so many things that are unappealing to me. And for some reason, something's happened to that baseball that has created and some ways a Sunday softball game with your buddies.
If you don't consider Tyler O'Neill an everyday player, or Munoz, and you shouldn't because they haven't played much, the leading hitter in the Cardinals is .278, Jose Martinez. Brian, you got an interesting batting average stat there?
I texted it to you, but it's .252 this year, up from .248 last year.
And that's, is .248 the lowest?
I'm going through it. That's the lowest I'm seeing. It was usually in the years prior holding steady around .255 or so. So we're going back.
That's my point being, if you hit .275 in the big leagues and you can catch the ball on the defensive side, you're a nice player. I mean, think about this. How many everyday players at the position the Cardinals have? Really, just everyday good players right now.
That are above that or could consistently be at
that level?
My point
being is, yeah, at that level, .275, and can play defense and play every day.
Right now, there's no one because Goldschmidt's hitting .253. A shortstop.
What's DeJong at these days?
DeJong right now is batting .254.
So my point being is that I think, you know, when some of these players have had success in the past, yeah, they've had great years or good years, but I think we need to lower the bar on our expectations. And I think St. Louis is guilty of over-evaluating their talent. I mean, we love the St. Louis Cardinals. They're almost like our local high school team, and we feel like these kids are, you know, we're parents and these are our kids. I mean, that's kind of the And that's a beautiful thing. Don't get me wrong. And we always think our kids are better than they really are.
Are you talking fans or franchise or media? Or?
I think the whole everybody.
We pump them up a little bit. We feel we've got a crew.
Well, my
of
point
all-stars.
Being is, that Michaelis now is going to be great the rest of the year. Is he? Because he had a shutout last night. Is he going to be like he was last year?
Well,
because of one start.
He is trending a little better.
No, I'm not saying. I'm just saying. But I, you know, if you read the articles today, it's like now
he's back.
He's going to be, you know, he's going to have a shot out.
As long as he pitches at Busch Stadium. That, have you ever seen that split? Brian, was it 2.5 ERA at home?
Yes.
And about 7 on the road? It's just it's a crazy
Which
thing
is weird
seen.
Because last year he was setting records as a road pitcher, right? Didn't he go 10-0 on the road? Mm-hmm. It was the exact opposite last year. Now they re-upped him, and I understand it's hard to find good arms. But they put a price tag on him that I think blew everybody away. They gave him 4 years, $68 million.
$68 million. Well, he won 18 games last year. Let's not forget.
I think you're being sarcastic, right? 18. He did. No, he did. No, I'm saying, but does that get you $68 million?
In today's game, 18 wins?
So you're being, I think you're being sarcastic. You're saying he deserved that it's
worth
it.
But he had 4 career major league victories before that. It's not like there's a big body
of
work.
I'm not saying 60, he deserves it. I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is, you got to remember he had 18 wins.
He was pretty good. Yeah.
So they were thinking maybe this is, you know, something new. Now, they were in a position, they didn't have to do that.
Right.
But they figured maybe if they give him this money that he
settles in a little bit.
And yeah, but at the same time, maybe if they just extended him, he'd be still hungry and he might be the same pitcher he was last year.
All right, we got a break. We're going to get into some Cardinal moves that they could make before the All-Star break. The great Andy Van Slyke is with us. Martin Kilcoyne, Frank Cusumano here till 12. Opening segment brought to you by Worldwide Technology Raceway at Gateway. Remember, the Bomberito 500 coming up next month. All those cars that drove in the Indy 500 will be in action at Gateway. Get your tickets now. We'll be right back after this.